But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by what? Worldly clamors. Where were they? Mostly within himself. Money, power, and prestige. And they stayed his enemy for the rest of his life. And he writes about that because that's where his depression came from, because he didn't think he was getting from the world what he ought to get. You cannot get from this world what it does not have to give. The world of the world is not a well place. If you believe that, turn on your TV tonight and look at the news. Not a well place there. We try to go to the world to get things that only God can give us. If that makes any sense to you. And I have been to the world, and I thought that that would give me all I wanted. I'm not any different than Wilson. And so it's been ever since, how blind I have been. December the 11th of 1934, Bill Wilson will be forced, after his discussion with Ebby, to return to his place of safety, the hospital. He will have some drugs with him, and he will have some bottles of beer. He has no idea that this is going to be his last drink. None. It's never been before. Why would it be now? At the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremors. You betcha. He is down there one more time. The disease has got him whipped. He says, there I humbly offered myself to God. He took step three. As then I understood him, to do with me as he would. Now that's a pretty open statement, because that's what I tell God in step three. I tell God in step three, I cannot save me from me. If you'll save me from me, I will serve you. That's what I told God. God help me is all inclusive. I know if I say God help me, if you ask me, I owe you. If I ask another human being to help me, I owe you something. Honorable people always owe when they get help. I place myself unreservedly under his care and direction. Part of step three. What we're going to look at here, his taking a step three comes from the Oxford group, because that's what he knows. This is his Oxford group third step that gets changed a little down the line. He said, I admitted for the first time that of myself I was, what? Nothing. I am powerless. He accepts it. I am nothing. And that without him I was lost. Absolutely. I mean, we're now clinging to the thinnest of thin threads here. I've got no choices here. I rudely faced my sins, called step four, and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away, root and branch. Who's his newfound friend? God. I have not had a drink since. Somewhere around December the 14th of 1934. 6 and 7 are those steps. God took them away. 6 and 7. If you ask me, how do I know God loves you? I will tell you. Step 7 says, take all of me, the good and the bad. My God is willing to love me with the good and the bad. I then am forced to love you with the good and the bad. And if you have any kind of an inventory that looks like mine, there's no way for me to judge you. Because if I do, I'm a hypocrite. And if I'm a hypocrite, I'm a liar. And my book says that he demands rigorous honesty. And with that, I cannot do that. My schoolmate visited me. Who's the schoolmate? Ebby. What did they do? I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. Took a fifth step with him. We made a list of people I'd heard of towards whom I felt resentment. They made an 8-step list. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals admitting my wrong. He's going to do 9. Never was I to be critical of them. He couldn't. I was to right all such matters to the utmost of my ability, and sometimes that's God-given ability. God help me. And the more powerless you get, the better off you'll be. And that is a struggle. I guarantee. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. We call it step 10. So I test my thinking. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. This does not make sense. The world of the Spirit, you gotta get out, you gotta get untangled, you gotta get unchained from the world of the world and surrender to new thinking. As long as you stay chained to the world of the world, you're screwed. I would sit quietly when in doubt. Step 11. Asking only for direction and strength. I can't even do that. I gotta ask God for the power to do it. To meet my problems as He would have me. Not as I want to. As God would have me. Never was I to pray for myself except as my request bore my usefulness to others. And when we close today, I hope we'll use that. We'll show you a little new way to do the closing. Then only might I expect to receive a promise, but that would be in great measure, total and complete surrender to a process called the solution. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter into a new relationship with my Creator. The old one did not work. Did not work. I would have the elements of a way of living. This is what this is. AA is a way of living, which answered all my problems, not just alcohol. Belief in the power of God, step 2. They'll lay a few principles on you here. Plus enough willingness, step 3. Honesty, 4 and 5. What's required. If I go too fast, back me up. I can back up. And humility, 6 and 7. Takes 5 steps in this program to bring you to enough humility to speak to your God. That's why they send you home after the 5th step. To establish 1 through 9. 1 through 9. Going to establish. Don't worry about finding God. He's not lost. Work the process. You'll find Him. And maintain. And I wrote, and growth. And 11 and 12. The new order of things were the essential requirements. What did this guy do? He took the steps in the hospital before he ever wrote them. That might have a little bit to do with the Oxford group, and it might have a little bit to do with God. Simple but not easy. A price had to be paid, he says. It meant the destruction of self-centeredness, the old ideas. That's what he's talking about. I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. These were revolutionary, December the 14th of 1934, at best estimates of most historians. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals. The moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. Bill is having a spiritual experience which will change the course of destiny for you and me. Because it's upon this experience that AA is built. Only reason we're sitting here. So he said, there was a sense of victory followed by such a peace and serenity as I'd never known. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though the great clean winds of spirit of mountaintop flew through and through. God comes to most men gradually of an awakening. But His impact on me was sudden and profound, an experience. He makes the description for you. For a moment I was alarmed. So would I be. There's a bigger description of it in some other books you can read. He said the light, the room lit up. He challenged God. If there's a God, show yourself. And the room lit up, and I'd have been saying, I'm not ready. Dim the light, pal. Come back later. Get some room service. I'm just not ready. That scared me to death. For a moment, I was alarmed and called my friend the doctor to ask if I was still sane. He listened and wondered as I talked. Finally, he shook his head saying, and I love this guy. He keeps it simple. Something has happened to you I don't understand. Carl Jung, the famous psychiatrist, called it a phenomenon, meaning an unexplainable happening. If some of the greatest minds in the world don't understand the world of the spirit, then who am I to think that I know something? The longer I'm here, the less I know. But you'd better hang on to it, he says. Anything is better than the way you were. I mean, that don't take a whole lot of thinking, does it? I can figure that one out. Yeah, Bill, you look better. You better hang on to it, you know. The good doctor now sees many men who've had such experiences. He knows they're real. While I lay in the hospital, a thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely given to me. Perhaps I could help some of them, and they in turn might work with others. We call that sponsorship. It has been in this program forever. I don't know where people get this idea from. What do you call that? One man giving it to the next. One woman, man giving it to the next. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all of my affairs. The 12 steps of the program have principles, and we'll tell you what they are. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. What did he do? He walked through the steps with him. Just like Dr. Bob. That's all the sponsor does. You've got no power. All I can do is be your friend and walk through the steps as you go through. And then maybe you'll help the next guy. Maybe I can lighten your load a little bit as you go through. Maybe I can tell you part of my story. And maybe when you're having a hard time getting out that thing that's so shameful that you've done, and I tell you that I've sold my body for alcohol, and you go, not you though. Because they don't see me the same way because I'm not the same guy anymore. They can't imagine I'd do anything like that. Certainly did. And it wasn't to a woman either. All right. Faith without works was dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For the alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through works and self-sacrifice for others. He could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. It is your mission statement, if you want it to be that. And so when I go out and speak somewhere and three guys run up, and one's 18, two of them are 19 years old, we're not happy going from three. And I say, come and see me, we'll talk about it. And I want to know how thorough your fourth step was. I want to know if you made all your ninth step amends. And I want to know if you're sponsored. And I don't care if you're a delegate or you sponsor. Being a delegate and sponsoring two different services. And they don't count the same. Because that's not what I told God I'd do. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. And there's another death here that's worse than that. It's to be sober and dry. There's nothing like it. It's hell. I've seen it many times. It'd take you to suicide. Never pick up a drink. Want to kill yourself. It's total survival. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it's just like that. My wife and I abandoned ourselves. Look at that. With enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. What did he tell us that my good friend Mike wrote to you today? He said we recover two ways. One is through the spiritual method, which is the steps, and the other one's called altruistic behavior. Altruistic means other-centered. If you want to beat selfish and self-centered, you got to get other-centered. And when you get other-centered, that means service. Our whole program's about service. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, or 18 months. He couldn't get any work. During which I found little work. And fact is, God did not want him to go to work. Guarantee you. Every time he turned, it wouldn't work for him. That which works is God's will. That which does not is not. My sponsors had me on that. He's like a bad dog with a collar, and he just hangs on to me right there. He said, did it work? No. Then get out of it. That which works is God's will. That which does not, is not. Get out of it. Your job is to quit doing it as quick as possible. It's amazing how much time I can spend beating my head against the wall. Now, he's going to give you a set of promises here. But he's going to start off by telling you that he was not too well at the time. I was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentments. He still got something going on. He's not giving all up. This sometimes generally drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. How do we get out of him? That's right. See, we have all kind of thoughts. If I told you every thought that went through my head last night when I woke up this morning, you'd be looking for a net. Those are human thoughts. Nothing wrong with them. I don't act on those thoughts today. I used to act on the thought. If I had a thought, I acted on it. Something stands between the thought and the action today. Many times I've gone to my old hospital in despair. Talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. A promise. It is a design for living that works in rough going. A promise. It works for him, it'll work for you. We commenced to make many friends, and a fellowship has grown up among us, for which is a wonderful thing to feel a part. A promise. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. A promise. It doesn't say that you're not going to have problems. In fact, it says just the opposite. You will have problems. But I can go through it. Sweetie's had some real problems. He's a lot younger than me. I'm 17 years her senior. I told her to pick on somebody her own age. She said, I think that God's got something to do with this relationship, and you need to shut up. I said, okay. She's been sick twice, bad sick. And I ended up taking care of her. They just recently had a valve put in the heart. You know, and I had to struggle with God over that. But I surrendered very quickly. And here's what I told him. When they called me from the hospital, we thought she was having a little pneumonia problem. Her sister said, you better get over here. She's in heart failure. I will tell you how important it is to have somebody by your side that you can trust. And when I got there, she put out her hand and I took her hand. And she knows that I love her. She can trust me. And I said, we're going to get through this thing. I talked to God about it. And we survived it. But I had to surrender all the way in. So I sat in my car before I drove over and said, better get it on now, God. I just talked to God like this, like I talked to you. I don't have no special deal. I wish I could have it tell you I got sore knees. I don't. But I just talked to God. He walks with me hand in hand. And I just talked to him every day like I talked to you. And I said to him, I know that I'm powerless. And I know if something happens that you'll take great care of it. But if you'll leave her with us, I will stop talking about her character defect. And that's been 11 months ago when I haven't said one word about her character defect. And she says to me one day, you certainly are being a good boy lately. You rotten girl. I have seen hundreds of families set their feet in the path that's really going somewhere. What a promise. Good God Almighty, what you can do for people through God's help. Have seen the most impossible domestic situations righted. Feuds and bitterness of all sorts wiped out. I've seen all of this. I have seen men come out of asylums and prisons, I'm going to put in there, and resume a vital place. My oldest convict's 27 years in the joint. He's 11 years sober. And I would trust him with my life. Because he's not the same guy. In the lives of these families, and resume a vital place in the lives of their families, I have done that. I have lived that. My children all talk to me today. They all call me on Father's Day. To finish my amends with my first wife, I had to sit down with her when my youngest daughter was having a baby. And I had to put my pride aside. And I had to call her up and say, the boy suggested I call up and ask you if I could stay, rent a little room for you because babies don't come on time. And she said, I think that'd be a wonderful idea. She's never remarried. And that night when we come home from that hospital and that baby was born, we were sitting there talking. I said, I got something else to tell you. I'd already made amends a long time ago. I said, I got something else to tell you. And she said, what's that? And I said, I want you to understand that I loved you when I stood in that church in front of 500 people. And I love you today. It was alcoholism that drove us apart. It was nothing personal. And she cried. And she thanked me for that. Because she didn't think I loved her. See? And today, we're super friends. We're bound together. Why wouldn't you be? You have four children. You're bound to be bound together. There's no other way. If you're running around calling her bad names, man, you better look at yourself. You know, you better look at yourself. She's a wonderful woman. My children were so fortunate to have a solid mother who didn't drink. I sent money home. I couldn't not do that. Business and professional people have regained their sanity. It happens all the time. There's scarcely any form of trouble and misery we have not been overcome among us. You betcha. In one western city, which is Cleveland, Ohio, And it's advised, there's 1,000 of us in our families. That's Clarence Snyder and the work of Snyder. He sponsored 1,000 men in his lifetime. There are a lot of people who didn't like him, but brother, let me tell you, when it comes to the work, he was there. We meet frequently so that newcomers can find the fellowship they seek. Why do we meet frequently? Because we're the carriers of the solution. What should the program be about? Solution. That's what you're there for. You are the time-tested carriers of the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous. You have been chosen as far as I'm concerned. And that's what you need to be doing, I believe, so that the newcomer might find the solution. Have you ever been to a meeting and no solution was talked about? Yeah. How quickly did you want to get out of there? Yeah. I'll sit there, but man, I hit the parking lot like the rest of them do. Man, but when there's a good solution, I could tell here in this meeting when I got here today. You people are, I could tell by the way you acted, interacted with each other. But I've been in meetings in which, man, I couldn't wait to leave. It was so bad. It was like being drugged through hell again. And when you have a good meeting, what happens? You can't get them out the door. The secretary said, we got to shut out the lights and go home. And they go, all the way out to the car. Man, they're having a great time, you know. At these informal gatherings, one may often see 50 to 200 persons. Oh my, we have a meeting down in our area. We had sometimes 1,500. I spoke to them when I was 10 years old. We had 2,500 people there. It's one of the largest meetings. Come on down and visit us sometime. Give me a call. First Saturday of every month. Big church down there. They bring in big speakers. And once in a while they throw a guy in like me. So, it was a mistake. We are growing in numbers and power. An alcoholic in his cup is an unlovely creature. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in my home. His name was Bill C. He was a lawyer from Canada. He took a rubber tube and tied it to his nose and taped his mouth shut and to a gas stove and put it on the deal. And when Lois came home, he was laying on the bed, neatly made and dead. He stole their clothes from them to get booze and to gamble with. He was a bridge gambler. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seemingly worldliness and levity. You go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and probably the most honest place in the world, I believe, and people share, and they share horrible things sometimes, and we laugh. People who do not understand are going, what's so funny about that? The Al-Anons, if they come to the meeting, you know, they go, that's not funny. What do you mean you tried to jump off the Oakland Bay Bridge? I knew a guy one time, he had a little Volkswagen car, and he went out there, he'd been out there before, and if he looked over the edge, he was too scared to scare him, so he wouldn't do that, like Bill. If he looked down, he wouldn't jump, so couldn't go to the window. He thought he'd just jump through the window. So this guy went there, put the blinker lights on his little Volkswagen, jumps out and just runs and dives over that edge of that bridge. Well, they have paint wagons that go along the bridge. And he falls in one. And he gets a black eye and he cuts the side of his eye and he gets up and he said, it must not be God's will. And he come out and went home, you know. And we sit around and just laugh like hell about things like that, you know. And they go, what's so funny about that, you know? Just underneath, there's a deadly earnestness, and that's true because life and death is here. How many people in this room have seen somebody in the fellowship die from this disease? See, that's what he's talking about. Underneath it all, right there, this is a life and death situation. And God has chosen you. Now, you have chosen him. I don't know which way it goes. And he's granted you the solution. He has qualified you to do something very special in this world. He has put his trust and love in you. And I think that's a big burden. Sometimes it feels like a burden. It's not a burden if I let God do it. But if I get to thinking I'm doing it, oh boy, that gets heavy duty. You know, don't you drink on me, you bastard, I'll shoot you, you know. Well, you're not going back to prison, pal. I'll kill you before you go. Just underneath, there's a deadly urge. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Doesn't mean I'm going to die. I'll go to dry drunkenness. I wish I was dead. Most of us feel we look no further for utopia. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friends, simple talk, Ebby, in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth, goodwill to men.
A couple of things before we leave Bill's story that I like to touch on that make a lot more meaning to me today than they used to. And one was, I'm always caught by the kind of the paradox between pages 14 and 15 of Bill's story when I love on one page that Bill just had the spiritual experience and the wind's blowing through his hair and life is wonderful and everything is perfect. And you cross over directly on the page and 18 months later, he's plagued by waves of self-pity, resentment, you know, and he's ready to go off and, you know. My sponsees all the time, do a lot of work at the Salvation Army in Oakland, and, you know, somehow those guys, you know, natural for an alcoholic, but the alcoholic addicts, they want it today, and they want it now, and they want it fast, and I want the solution, and I want it to be here. And, you know, it's like, well, I got to spend 6 months here, or a year here, or whatever it is. And I don't understand. It's like, no, you don't understand. Bill Wilson didn't, like, have the spiritual experience, and you forgot to read page 15. And you got to work on it all the time. His program was ongoing, and the solution was in the sponsorship. And then you go back to Dr. Bob's story, and so a lot of times we don't get back to Bob's story. On page 160, I'm sorry. Bob's story is the first one in the back of the book. In fact, it starts on 171. But I'm always amazed when because Bob talks about the 2.5 years that he was in the Oxford group and he still got tight, you know, every night, nevertheless. So this religion and spirituality that he had, he was a very religious man. And ultimately, it was that connection, one alcoholic to another alcoholic, that brought him over and kept him going. So it was the sponsorship that brought him to the other side. But then, what I didn't see for a long time was on page 181, after he talks about that he's talking about his sponsorship and what it's doing. And sometimes Dr. Bob is held out as being, well, you know, another one that, you know, I got sober instantly and I didn't have, you know, this wasn't about how my program worked and how I grew. And then step 10, when we get there, going to talk about growing and understanding and effectiveness and how he's going to grow and understand effectiveness. Because on 181, the first full paragraph says, unlike most of our crowd, I did not, and so when he's talking about his experience, this is Dr. Bob's now, I did not get over my craving for liquor for months during the first 2.5 years of abstinence. Everybody takes the path the way that everybody takes the path, and nobody's is the same, and certainly nobody's is like instantaneous. You know, it wasn't with Bob, and it wasn't with Bill, and it wasn't with me. I don't know about you, maybe it was. But it's not so cut and dry as sometimes we make it out to be. Chapter 2, there's a solution. We of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. We are average Americans, all sections of the country, many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who normally would not mix. Talked about it in the preface of the fourth edition. But there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Old ocean liner steerage was the lowest class of, you know, you got down in the hold of the ship and you set up the captain's table, first class passengers. But unlike, and if the ship sank, we're all in the water. So for that period of time, they're together. But unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go on our individual way. The feeling of having shared a common peril is one element of the powerful cement that binds us. But that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. So go back to the doctor's story is that we are a certain group. We are a type. We are it. You know, we are a class of people, and it crosses all lines, all barriers, all races, creeds, religions, cultures, everywhere. Socioeconomic status. It doesn't matter. An alcoholic's an alcoholic's an alcoholic. And the thing that binds us together is that thing that we talked about, the one thing that we both have, or that we all have, that's talked about in the doctor's opinion. Can't drink. So that's the tremendous factor we went up, and that binds us together there. So we can't fall in the water, the ship can't be sinking, and we're all in the water and we're all going to drown if we aren't helping each other get out of it. But we never get to shore, because we're always in the water. The alcoholism is not going to go away. So the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. I'm going to stop here, and it's in the common solution is in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the spiritual experience. And it was talked about by the doctor, and it was represented again in Bill's story as being sort of the way to look at how the solution works. So it's a common solution. It's a solution for all of us. It's not the solution of the fellowship. It's not going to the meetings. It's the common solution, and the way they wrote down the common solution so there wouldn't be any question about it was to write the book. So the solution is as pointed out in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. Brotherly and harmonious actions are the specific directions given to us and outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no question about it with what the book says. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Wow. That's it. There is a solution. It's a common solution. It's common to all of us. It's contained in the book. Next page says, an illness of this sort, and we've come to believe it is an illness, involves those about us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him, and no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness. For with it there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferer. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. This is a family illness. This is an illness of everybody about us. This is the making of our harm. My excuse is always, I'm not ever hurting anybody but myself. Not my first wife, not my second wife, not my children, not my parents, not my sisters, my brothers, my employer, my ad infinitum. So we hope this volume will inform and comfort those who are and who may be affected. There are many. Highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us have found it sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss his situation without reserve. You know, I may talk to doctors. I never told a doctor the truth in my life. Never told anybody the truth in my life, but certainly not a doctor. Strangely enough, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find this even more unapproachable than the psychiatrist or the doctor. Bill's in the foundation here again. But the ex-problem drinker who has found a solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. That the man who is making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows what he's talking about, that his whole deportment shouts at the new prospect that he is a man with a real answer, that he has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except a sincere desire to be helpful, that there are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to endure. These are conditions we have found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. Once again, Bill's going to give me directions on how I'm supposed to do it all stuff. But none of us makes a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. We feel an elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. All of us spend much of our spare time in the sort of effort which we're going to describe. A few are fortunate enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to the work. If we keep on the way we're going, there's a little doubt that much good will result. But the surface of the problem would hardly be scratched. Those of us who live in large cities are overcome by the reflection that close by, hundreds are dropping into oblivion every day. Many could recover if they had the opportunity we had enjoyed. How then shall we present that which has been so freely given up? So we have concluded to publish an anonymous volume setting forth the problem as we see it. We shall bring to the task our combined experience, no theory, no subjective thought, the combined experience and knowledge. This should suggest a useful program for anyone concerned with a drinking problem. Of necessity, there will have to be a discussion of matters medical, psychiatric, social, and religious. We are aware that these matters are, from their very nature, controversial. Nothing would please us so much as to write a book which would contain no basis for contention or argument. We should do our utmost to achieve that ideal. Most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and a respect for their opinions are attitudes which make us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. I've got to find a spiritual solution, and I've got to be altruistic. I've got to be thinking of others. I can't get rid of the selfish and self-centeredness unless I'm outside of myself. So it says, you may already have asked yourself why it is that all of us became so very ill from drinking. Doubtless you are curious to discover how and why in the face. Doubtless you are curious to discover how and why in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. Wow. That's the purpose of the book. I'm going to get a specific answer to my question, what is it that I need to do to recover from the hopeless condition that has just been outlined for me in the doctor's opinion and Bill's story? All I want to know what the answer is. Actually, it says, we shall tell you what we have done. I don't know what I thought was going to happen with that line, but the word done there means a lot to me because it says not what we know, and that's not what the book's going to tell us is what they know or what they believe. It's the action that they took that brought them to the understanding. So I have to do something here. If we're going into a detailed discussion, it may be well to summarize some points as we've seen. What Bill's going to do from now up through page 60, I would say, as I'm working through them to get ready to make the decision, I'm just going to do one and two and one and two and one and two and one and two. I'm going to keep looking at the problem. I'm going to keep asking, can I have the solution? Do I understand step one? Do I understand step two? How many ways could my alcoholic mind talk me out of doing this program? Like I told you earlier in the program, at 20 years drunk, I found page 34 and it got me out for another 16 years. You know, I found a line that I really liked, and being a good manipulator, I was able to use that and escape the throes. You know, I thought I'd done a smart thing. You know, I want to know that I've answered every question because I've already been doing that for whether I drank for 2 years or I drank for 30 years. I've already found and made all the excuses, worked all the manipulations, found all the other ways around, and that's what we're going to talk about now. How am I going to become powerless, and how am I going to find a power greater than myself? Because those are the two conditions we talk about in 1 and 2. So he says, so let's discuss some points. How many times have people said to us, I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer or wine? Lay off the hard stuff. His willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. She's such a sweet girl. I should think he'd stop for her sake. The doctor told him if he ever drank again, it would kill him. But there he is, all lit up again. Now, these are commonplace observations on drinkers, which we hear all the time. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. We see that these expressions refer to people whose reactions are different from our own. Who are those people? Normal people. Normal people are never going to understand my illness. Normal people are never going to understand alcoholism. Moderate drinkers, and he's going to describe them. Moderate drinkers have a little trouble in giving up liquor entirely if they have a good reason for it. They can take it or leave it alone. I was never a moderate drinker. Anybody else? Moderate drinker? Just checking. See, I got to define. See, Bill's going to make me define myself as a real alcoholic here. I've got to define myself. Because I've always been trying to define myself the other way. The doctor told me, I don't know the truth and the false. I'm going along thinking I'm normal. Isn't it normal? Everybody gets up in the morning and has like 3 shots of brandy with their coffee. It's normal, isn't it? Well, if they don't, I bet they wish they could. I mean, I'm sure they would if they, you know, if they could. They just don't have the constitution for it, but it's... So then you have a certain type of hard drinker, one of my best excuses. He may have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate, although he may find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. Any hard drinkers? Just asking. What about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. You know, I wasn't even a moderate drinker when I started. Just a binge drinker when I started. He may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of his drinking career, he will begin to do what? Of his liquor consumption. What did the doctor tell us was our common condition? What's the one thing we all have in common? Cannot control. Here's the fellow who's been puzzling you, especially this lack of control. He does absurd. Now, want to make everybody just stand up or sit down or when they have to on these, you know. Anybody that can put their hand down if they don't do one of these, or put your hand up if you don't do one of them. You know, he does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. The real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He's seldom mildly intoxicated. He's always more or less insanely drunk. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature, but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world, yet he drinks for a day and he frequently becomes disgusting and even dangerously antisocial. He has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment, particularly when some important decision must be made or engagement kept. He is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor. But in that respect, he's incredibly dishonest and selfish. When he often possesses special abilities, skills, and aptitudes, and has a promising career ahead of him. He uses his gifts to build up a bright outlook for his family and himself, and then pulls the structure down on his head in a senseless series of sprees. He is a fellow who goes to bed so intoxicated he ought to sleep round the clock. Yet early next morning, he searches madly for the bottle he misplaced the night before. If he can afford it, he may have liquor concealed all over his house to be certain no one gets his entire supply from him to throw down the waste pipe. As matters grew worse, he began to use a combination of high-powered sedatives and liquor to quiet his nerves so he can go to work. Then comes the day when he simply cannot make and gets drunk all over again. Perhaps he goes to a doctor who gives him morphine or some sedative with which to taper off. Then he begins to appear at hospitals, sanitariums, detoxes, treatment centers, drug rehab, This is by no means a complete picture of the true alcoholic, as our behavior patterns vary, but this description should identify him roughly. Why does he behave like that? If hundreds of experiences have shown him that one drink means another debacle, with all its attendant suffering and humiliation, why is it he takes that one drink? Why can't he stay on the water wagon? What has become of the common sense and willpower that he has sometimes displayed with respect to other matters? Perhaps we will never, there will never be a full answer to these questions. Opinions often vary considerably as to why the alcoholic reacts differently from normal people. We are not sure why. Once a certain point is reached, little can be done for him. We cannot answer this riddle. We know that while an alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, he reacts like much like other men. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens, both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. If you ask him why he started on the last bender, the chances are he'll offer you one of 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of a man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so he can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of an alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. Once in a while, he may tell the truth. And the truth, strange to say, is usually that he has no idea why he took that first drink. Has no more idea why he took that first drink than you have. Some drinkers have excuses with which they're satisfied part of the time, but in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. Once this malady has a real hold, they're a baffled lot. There is the obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game. But they often suspect they were down for the count. And my mind is always going to defend that sense of ease and comfort that the doctor's opinion talks about. I always want to go back to that, you know, for whatever reason I can concoct. All I really want is that sense of ease and comfort. And at one time it was like some time. And at the end it's like, you know, I'm killing myself for like 15 seconds. You know, I get 15 seconds by about the fifth drink, all of a sudden and push happens, and then I pick up the next one, and the whoosh is past, and it's gone. But my mind will still defend that. And I can't tell you a reason. I don't have a reason. And I finally understand the longer I'm sober, but I never had a reason. I'm an alcoholic. I don't need a reason. I'm it. I just get, I'm going to take any reason, good, bad, or indifferent. But it says how true this is. Few realize in a vague way their families and friends think that these drinkers are abnormal. I am abnormal. Very hard thing to say. My wife still doesn't look at me very funny when I come home and I say I'm abnormal and insane. You know, I finally realized that. I went and saw Don. Don told me today I'm abnormal and insane. I'm okay with that now. And now years later she says, well, how's it going? I said, I'm still abnormal and insane. And, and that's okay though, now. It's okay now. I'm powerless, unmanageable, abnormal, and insane. As long as I keep that in mind, life is good. Because as soon as I think I got some power, it's all over. So, are abnormal, but everybody hopefully awaits the day when the sufferer will arouse himself from his lethargy and assert his willpower. God normally always thinks that all I got to do is say, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to straighten up and fly right. The tragic truth is, if the man is a real alcoholic, the happy day may not arrive. He has lost control. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into the state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. The tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it's suspected. There's squiggly writing again. Italics, important. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. I couldn't bring to mind suffering and humiliation from 4 hours before. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind and disperse. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There's a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time, so here's how. Or perhaps he doesn't think at all. How often have some of us begun to drink in this nonchalant way, and after the third or fourth, pounded on the bar and said to ourselves, for God's sakes, how did I ever get started again? Only to have that thought supplanted by, well, I'll stop with a sixth drink, or what's the use anyway? When that sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid. Is the fellowship human aid? I mean, we're all there, right? And we're all human, and we're all sick. It's hard to heal a sick mind with a sick mind. And unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history. But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop, but cannot. Here it is. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, step 4, the leveling of our pride, step 8 and 9, and the confession of our shortcomings, step 5 and step 7, which the process requires for its successful consummation. The process requires. Half measures availeth nothing. But we saw that it really worked in others. And we come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life. That's why we're here. My life is hopeless and my life is futile. As I've been living it. You know, we saw that it worked. That means the experience that Bill had with Ebby. I sat across the table, or I sat in a meeting, I looked out there, and there was another drunk. I heard that story, I can identify with him or her, and now I understand that I can have what they have got. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem was solved, there's a little note there if you want to sponsor. It says, when we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved. If I want to sponsor, what am I doing? I think it says, I'm approaching. In case you were wondering who's asking who for the date. There was nothing left for us to do but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not dreamed. The promises of step two. You see, it was the great fact is just this and nothing else. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact in our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. So if you're seriously alcoholic, as we were, we believe there's no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region in which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other was to accept spiritual help. This we did because we were honest and wanted to and were willing to make the effort. I love this line because it said we have two alternatives. You know, you never ask this question. If I stood down at the BART station in Walnut Creek and I said, okay, everybody that comes back on the train, I'm going to say, do you want to go to a bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of your existence, or do you want a spiritual solution? And you ask everybody coming off the train, and you said, let's see, I want to die a miserable alcoholic death, or I want to live a fulfilled spiritual life. What do you think? The alcoholic goes, oh, wait a second. I better have a drink to think about this. A sane, normal person doesn't even have to ask this question. You know? It's amazing. We actually consider that question. When I read it, I was like, no. So next comes Roland Hazard's story, which Don talked a little bit about earlier. A certain American businessman had ability, good sense, and high character. Roland Hazard, Don gave his background, great family, a lot of money, very wealthy. For years he had floundered from one sanatorium to another. He had consulted the best-known American psychiatrist. He had gone to Europe. 1930, went to Europe, placed himself in the care of celebrated physician, the psychiatrist Carl Jung. One of the big three psychiatrists, Freud, Adler, Jung, who prescribed for him. Though experience had made him skeptical, he finished his treatment with unusual confidence. His physical and mental condition were unusually good. Above all, he believed he acquired such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its inner springs that relapse was unthinkable. Remember Bill's first visit to Dr. Silkworth when he first met him? The doctor explained, hey, here's the problem. You got this allergy, you got this obsession, your self-will, you can take off, you got self-knowledge now, go get them. Self-will didn't work, but now knowledge can, take them out there and run. Bill went out there and what happened? Nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. More baffling still, he could give himself no satisfactory explanation for his fault. So he returned to this doctor, whom he admired, and asked him point blank why he could not recover. He wished above all things to regain self-control. He seemed quite rational and well-balanced with respect to other problems, yet he had no control whatever over alcohol. Why was this? He begged the doctor to tell him the whole truth, and he got it. In the doctor's judgment, he was utterly hopeless. Dr. Jung diagnosed Roland Hazard utterly hopeless, as Dr. Silkworth diagnosed Bill Wilson utterly hopeless. He could never again regain his position in society, would have to be placed under lock and key or hire a bodyguard if he expected to live a long life. That was the great physician's opinion. But this man lives and is a free man. He does not need a bodyguard, nor is he confined. He can go anywhere on earth where other free men may go without disaster, provided. Ooh, another conditional word. Don talked about conditional words. He He remains willing to maintain a certain simple attitude. Some of our alcoholic readers may think we can do without spiritual help. Let us tell you the rest of the conversation our friend had with the doctor. The doctor said, "You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I have never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you." Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. He said to the doctor, "Is there no exception?" "Yes," replied the doctor, "there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena, acts that take place, manifestations that take place that cannot be explained. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding forces in the lives of these men are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begins to dominate them." What did the doctor just say? "I got to take all my old thinking and replace it with new thinking. I got to take all," he said, if these people, what happened to them, is all their old attitudes went away and all new attitudes came into their life. I had a total psychic change, which the doctor's opinion talked about earlier today. That's what Dr. Jung just said. That the phenomena has to take place that turns them 180 degrees. He says, "In fact, I've been trying to produce such an emotional rearrangement within you. With many individuals, the method which I have employed are successful, but I've never been successful with an alcoholic of your description." Upon hearing this, our friend was somewhat relieved, for he reflected that, after all, he was a good church member. This hope, however, was destroyed by the doctor's telling him that while his religious convictions were very good, in his case, they did not spell the necessary vital spiritual experience. Here was a terrible dilemma in which our friend found himself when he had the extraordinary experience, which, as we have already told you, made him a free man. We, in our turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed had proved to be a loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given to us, if you prefer, a design for living that really works. The distinguished American psychologist William James, in his book, Varieties of Religious Experience, indicates a multitude of ways in which men have discovered God. "We have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try." I think that sentence I just read, I call it the spiritual premise of AA. Those having religious affiliations will find here nothing disturbing to their beliefs or ceremonies. There is no friction among us over such matters. We think it only concerns of ours with religious bodies our members. We think it no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify with as individuals. This should be entirely personal affair, which each one decides for himself in light of past association or his present choice. Not all of us join religious bodies, but most of us favor such membership. In the following chapter, there appears an explanation of alcoholism as we understand it. Then a chapter addressed to the agnostic. Many who once were in this class are now among our members. Surprisingly enough, we find that such convictions no great obstacle to a spiritual experience. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal stories. Each individual in the person of the story describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. I'm going on a spiritual journey to find a relationship with my Creator, my God, my Spirit of the universe, my whatever I want it to be. I'm going to get clear-cut directions. If I follow the directions and walk the path, I'm going to have a spiritual experience. And you know what? It's not going to be mine. It's going to be personal to you. That's what the stories tell us. That's why we tell stories. You see, I can't, if I could describe God, then guess what? It wouldn't be God anymore. If I understood it, it wouldn't be there. But it has to be in here, and it can only be for me, and the only way I can communicate that with you is my life has changed, my experience changes my life. That's what happens here. I tell you my story so that you understand that I made the journey, and as I read through the book, everybody made a different journey. We don't all get there the same way. So we hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste or hope. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see these pages and will believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing.